everyone. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast World Cup special number 323 that we've done. We are out of the box for the World Cup. We decided that we should get the chance to wax lyrical or not about events in Russia. I'm Michael Bailey. A very good afternoon to you. I am joined by a stellar Pinken podcast crew this fine afternoon. We have Deputy Head of Sport here in Norfolk, Mark Armstrong.
Hello there.
England fan?
Yes.
Okay, that'll do. Head of sport here in Archant Norfolk, Chris Lakey. Hello, Chris.
Morning, afternoon, evening.
Wonderful cake.
Forgot what time of day it was.
That's fine. I was just going to get straight into the cake that your wife brought in.
Yeah, wasn't it good? It weighed £26. It was good as a good Mayor Carp.
England fan?
Posh.
That'll do. Close enough. Same difference. And my Norwich City covering colleague, David Fraser. You're busy tweeting as we chat, Dave.
Ish, yes. About Jamal Lewis potentially getting a new contract at Norwich because apparently Bournemouth and Watford have been looking at him this summer. So we'll see where that goes. But that would probably make sense for Jamal to get a new contract. Probably earned it. Got himself a bit of Northern Ireland recognition next year. But did you say £24, the fruitcake?
No, but I think it could have been. That was darn heavy. When I was coming in on the A140, there were cars slowing down, watching me as I came by.
Yeah.
It was leaning a bit. I was tilting.
Your fuel consumption went way down.
Yeah, I've got an eco car, but it's not working at the moment.
It's a bit lighter now, though, isn't it?
Yeah, got a tree full of cherries in it. Magnificent.
What a cake. Sadly, we can't put across just how lovely the cake was in either video or audio form.
Somebody had a piece and said, "This is the finest thing without chocolate I've ever tasted." So I have to bring the chockey next time.
I think that's why Chris can keep an eye on his desk, just to make sure no one comes across and starts nicking cake while we're in it doing a podcast. Well done, Dave. That's the last we'll mention of Norwich City probably on this World Cup special podcast. I'm sure it won't be because you know, we can't talk about England for a whole 20-30 minutes, but there we go. So we are here. We are going to just go through some topics on the World Cup, have a bit of fun, hopefully. This is the second podcast since we made a sort of a deal of trying to relaunch it, however you describe it. If you want to get in touch with us or subscribe, then you can find all the details you need at pinken.com/podcast. So obviously the first subject we need to talk about is England, because we're not out of the World Cup. We've got a third game, group game, coming up against Belgium. There's only a few bits and bobs riding on it, but England have already qualified two games in, Mark. It's unprecedented. We can whinge if we want, but ultimately, it's not been this good for a long time.
It's going well, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, we're sort of last couple of World Cups, and it's been so dull, wasn't it? Particularly, I remember 2010 when, you know, the so-called golden generation, and a couple of games, I think it was in the Algeria 0-0. Oh, you just
don't bring that back.
It's just absolutely terrible. And then obviously the last one was just even worse. We didn't even get out of the group. But this one, yeah, I mean, you really like what Southgate's doing around this. There's a real, seems to be a real sort of feel good factor around the squad, a nice young squad, and you can't really argue with what they've done so far. I was particularly pleased with the Tunisia result. I mean, the 2-1, because Tunisia looked a decent side to me. You know, they're tough to beat, and I think we'll probably come on to it, but there really aren't any that bad a sides at this World Cup, I don't think. And for how England put away Panama as well, that was pretty impressive stuff.
Amazing how much that late goal against Tunisia made a difference, because that is just what carried them through the Panama game.
Only as good as your last goal. It was. I think had that not happened, then, you know, the whole atmosphere in this country and in Russia would have been a lot different. And then they go and bang a half dozen in against Panama. And as Mark alluded to, there's a lot of football snobbery around at the moment from people who say, well, it's only Panama, it's only Morocco, which is completely ludicrous, because the gap between the best and the worst in the World Cup finals is not that big. You know, everybody assumes that because it's little Panama, they should get tonked 6-1 every time. It's a disgraceful way of viewing things, I think. There are tougher tests. There are no ridiculous teams anymore. Many years ago, I think poor old Zaire looked a little bit out of their depth. But that sort of gap in football has reduced quite a lot. It doesn't exist, and it annoys me ever so much. Football snobbery always has done.
FIFA will claim credit for that, won't they? Because they've put more teams in the tournaments and therefore everyone's got better because of it. But I don't know if that's entirely true.
I really want to say, but it wouldn't be legal, that FIFA will take credit because they've taken more money from more teams to play in more tournaments and that. But that's something we shouldn't say.
Yes, probably. I can always bleep it, don't worry. I agree with Mark, and it's Gareth Southgate is the one who's really impressed me. The way he's spoken, the way he's got his side playing and the style, and again, caveat being the two teams they've played, you know, it's not going to be a sterner test as what they've got coming up, but still, the way they've gone about it, we've seen far worse before. And I say that as someone who was quite looking forward to Sam Allardyce managing England in major tournaments, and then that obviously all blew up. So, I was expecting to see a Gareth Southgate's England side being a bit wet and a bit lacking personality and stodgy, but like his under-21 side was in many ways. It's not been like that, Dave. We've been off our seats. You've been down the pub throwing beer over people. It's been exciting.
I certainly have not, Mr. Bailey. I like Southgate a lot as a man and as a coach. And I've enjoyed reading how he's got stuck into his research in terms of going to the Super Bowl, going to NFL games, NBA games, really trying to find influences from other sports, right down to, I think it was Steve Holland had spoken to the coach of Elise Christie, the speed ice skater from the Winter Olympics, to even try and get those little bits and pieces of knowledge that they can get from elsewhere. And
was it how to deliver when you really need to?
Let's hope not.
The point's good, Dave. The point's good. Carry on.
Yeah, but the poor lady's ankles did let her down a touch, didn't they? But in football terms, yeah, I've enjoyed it. You know, the second half against Tunisia was quite poor, and like you say, that goal has dug them out of a hole to a certain extent. But and it was great, you know, 5-0 up at half time. That is, you know, that just does not happen for England fans, and that's great. But Panama were atrocious, and two of the goals were penalties. One of them, Harry Kane knew absolutely nothing about. They managed to concede a goal where they literally, it seemed like they didn't realise the whistle had been
coming out here.
And yeah, well, I did get into a bit of a Twitter spat with some people on Sunday night because I was just trying to give a bit of realism, and I understand, because we've had such dross and hard times in tournaments over the years, that everyone just wanted to celebrate and enjoy the big moment. But all this chucking beer around and going mental like they've won the World Cup when you're beating Panama 6-1, I think is absolutely ludicrous. And I just think everybody will go, if they lose to Belgium tomorrow or Thursday night, people will go off the other side and be, oh, Southgate doesn't know what he's doing, and it'll just go completely the other way. I just think there needs to be a bit more middle ground, to be honest.
It's like a true England fan.
I think in years gone by, though, we probably would have drawn, even Panama, I think we would have drawn that 0-0 or won it 1-0, and it was so refreshing to see England play with a degree of freedom, and they play some really nice stuff. I mean, let's be honest, they could do with scoring a few more goals from free play. They're relying a lot on set pieces at the moment, and hopefully that will come. That's certainly the way Southgate wants them to play. But as I say, I think we should celebrate that they beat someone 6-1.
I'm not saying don't celebrate, of course, enjoy it, but you watch all these videos from around the country where, like, the whole pub, there's like 30 pints going in the air and everyone's celebrating. You know, if we've won
there's
the World Cup,
yeah, they're drunk.
Well, yeah, but
you know what I mean. Yeah, it's not just sitting there in your bedroom watching the TV or whatever. It's that's what the atmosphere is being created.
But
having a few beers, I don't personally drink, but you know, a lot of people, mates together, having a few beers out in the sun, watching the telly, England win. That's how they're going to react. They're not going to sit there and say, "Jolly good show. Let's have another dry white." You know, that's how it is.
But people didn't used to throw beer around until recent years. I mean,
there's a lot of things people don't do now that they didn't. But that's again, it's the way it's progressed. In 1970, when Gerd Müller was sticking one past Benetti, nobody was throwing beer around. Nobody was outside.
No.
Maybe because we'd only just got a colour telly.
And you hear a lot of people who were at the 1966 World Cup final talk about how it was quite a sedate affair, even though they'd won. But I grew up watching... Yeah, well done. But I grew up watching games at the RAF camp at Coltishall with some of my dad's mates. Worked there. My dad used to work on the base, and, you know, he knew people there. So that was learning to drink when I was younger with people in the RAF.
The truth is now coming
I'm just
out.
Letting him talk.
You know, but what my point is with proper men that who, you know, they could have a good time, but they weren't all chucking their beers around, and it just seems like people...
Is this anything to do with the World Cup or just the state of the nation?
Well, maybe.
Okay. All right, let's just swing on, because Norwich, in course, if only we were talking about Norwich, hey Dave, England play Belgium on Thursday night. It's the final group game. We already know that Belgium and England have qualified. We know that England will play either Senegal, Japan or Colombia. That's off the top of my head. But of course, it depends if they finish top of the group or not, which is, of course, what them and Belgium are playing for. And it could come down to yellow cards. What a hilarious situation that would be in terms of watching a game of football, Mark.
Yeah, I'm in two minds about this one, really, with whether they should finish. I mean, you obviously want them to beat Belgium, and it'd be nice to go through as group winners, but I did look at the side of the draw that we'd then be on, and it's just pretty horrendous. But I think I do want them to win against Belgium, and it'll be interesting what sort of side that they both put out.
There's already been suggestions, but I love this. I think it was from one of the England reporters. Well, might have been Gabriel Clark, the man who never knowingly looks happy. I don't know what's happened to him in the last few years. But
he did an interview of mine once with John Thaxton, came piling in. Don't like him.
He's just so...
Another one on the list.
I don't know. He's just always delivering bad news. Yeah, that's the way he does it. Yeah. What was my point? I can't remember. It might not have been him. But someone's saying, oh, you know, suggestions. Belgium are going to change all 10 outfield players. Brilliant. I mean, that sounds completely ridiculous to me, but, you know, it might happen.
I think if anyone's got a slight knock, but both countries have got the luxury to now say, no, you just sit this one out, chap. But... let's be honest, if both teams put out a full-strength team, then Belgium will probably edge it. Let's face it, let's not kid ourselves, because they've got some well-cast players. They're one of the favourites. England aren't really one of the favourites still, in my view. They've played, obviously, a couple of games, they've got a couple of good wins, but... what do you guys think? Would you like to win the group, or...?
I would. I don't give a monkey's who they play. To borrow a line from a boxer's or many boxers, you have to beat the best to be the best. And if you try and go through the backdoor route and plan, oh well, let's try and face Colombia or something, ain't going to work. It's all hard. It's all tough games. So don't buy it. I think his biggest problem is keeping everybody happy. Mm. And then for the Belgium game, the other side of the management coin now comes into effect. How does he pick a team that keeps momentum going without risking injury and tiredness? It's really difficult. When I've tried to put a team down, I thought, well, that's not the best team. But do you play your strongest team and take a risk and hope you win and keep the momentum going? Do you save your players so your full squad is at peak fitness and all still bubbling? Or are they bubbling? I mean, Harry Kane wants to play. I wouldn't play Harry Kane in a game like this.
No.
I want him to play, but I'd be worried.
I think, yeah.
But I ain't the manager. No. Gareth Southgate, big call now. Because Harry Kane will be standing there saying, no, come on, I've got to play. I'm the captain. I'm on, you know, on a personal mission as well. And he's a very, very good footballer. And you want to keep the momentum going. And you want your next opponents to be thinking, crikey, look what they've done. 3 out of 3. They're pretty decent. Rather than, oh, they won 2, but they lost to Belgium. See, England, same old story. So it's a big, big test of Southgate's management. I don't know which way he's going to go, but I'd be surprised if he makes 10 outfield changes.
Yeah, difficult. I mean, if you start in goal, Pickford hasn't had a great deal to do in the game, does he? Do you take him out? Yep. Do you risk Butland coming in and making a few saves, and then you give yourself a difficult decision? I think you probably just stick with your number one, don't you?
I think you have to stick with him, because I don't think he's done enough so far, and I'm not buying into that he's England number one either, because I don't think all this malarkey about him being out, you know, it's what he does with his feet which gives him that advantage. It's not. He paints himself quite literally into corners. He's all left-footed. He goes outside of the area to his left, and he leaves himself with few options. I don't like him at all with his feet. No,
controversial.
But he also hasn't been busy. And this is a game where he will be busy. Yeah. So let's see. I'd play him into form. I don't think he's done that great.
I mean, I think Harry has to start. What you do is hope you're in a situation where you can bring him off early, and mainly because of Harry's own. But he's also the captain. I think that degree of, if you're looking for that continuity of momentum, keeping someone like Harry in the side is really important. To me, it's the ones on the yellow cards you don't play, because that is a risk you don't need to take. They just come out immediately because, you know, you've got another game coming up as well, and picking up a yellow card in a game like this would be completely futile for the rest of the tournament. And then it's sort of mix and match, stick it together. There was a good conversation on some of the coverage about, you know, whether players in the squad travel to a World Cup thinking, well, hopefully I'll get some game time, or whether they're like, I'm part of the squad, there's a good chance I'm not going to play at all, that's okay because I'm part of the squad. I mean, I'm not a professional, but I would imagine I would be more akin to the latter view.
Yeah, from a squad harmony point of view, yeah, I think you want to try and make a few changes. Personally, I think Alexander-Arnold to bring him in right back, and Rose at left. I'd bring Phil Jones in for Walker or Stones, whoever physically needs the rest. Henderson has had a lot of football, of course, Champions League final, and Eric Dyroff is a bit more defensive against a good team. I don't think you can drop Harry Kane, really. If Ali's fit again, that's a good option, but you've got Delph to come in. I don't think Loftus-Cheek will want a rest. He'll be wanting to play as much as possible, and I like him a lot.
He's booked, so for me.
He's booked, is he? Okay, yeah sorry. So, if Ali can come back in for him, all good. So, Belgium are going to make changes as well. I'm a bit worried it's going to be a bit of a flat game, so unfortunately.
It'll stay dry then, though, Dave, so that's all right.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
You won't be heading those beer glasses, will you?
I can't imagine many people will go to the pub for this one, really. Well, I think most people will probably.
Any excuse?
Yeah. These games don't happen very often.
Sunny day. Clarky won't. He's at the Norfolk show.
Okay, well then, quick round the table. Sorry. Paul Clarkey. Quick round the table. I want to know how much it's coming home. Where are England going to get to at this World Cup? We're two games in. We can now reassess how they're going to do. Mark?
Quarterfinals, I think they'll get, and then they'll get found out.
Yeah, I think quarterfinals, and they'll get beaten. I don't know about found out.
Quarterfinals, Germany, penalty shootout defeat. Again.
Sorry. When was this podcast recorded? Which particular tournament?
Colombia. If they get Colombia in the last 16, that'd be very nice.
That would be difficult, but I think all those teams in the last 16, they should be beating if they play to what they're capable of. But I've just got a horrible feeling that it'll all come down to the usual issues in the end, and the intensity and the pressure of the big moment against a big team will falter.
What a moment as well. Young team, isn't it? So, again, another bit of that management strand is making a young team much more experienced than it probably is. All that experienced in Premier League terms, but young team at this.
If Southgate can avoid that, though, if they got Germany in the quarterfinals and they somehow, won a penalty shootout or something, then I suppose our entire mentality towards tournaments will change.
That's a load of pizza ad deals off, though, isn't it? Come on, boys, don't worry about it. I've got a plan.
What do you think?
Well, I always thought that they would get out of the group and then get knocked out the first decent side they played against, which is why I'm slightly worried if they come up against Colombia. But once we see them against Belgium, I think we'll have a better idea of just how good they could be in this tournament.
It's a bit misleading, though, isn't it? If there are players missing, it's not the real England. It might not be the real England versus the real Belgium.
You're right, but then you do get a little indication about the momentum, I think. Mm. And if they do make the changes and still look pretty fluent, then you can be like, okay, there's something running through the squad. If they look really disjointed and the keeper has a mare, then you're on a different page, I think. I do disagree with you about, and I know they can't influence it themselves, but the draw, I think, can make a massive difference to how far they can go. Because if they do end up getting Japan, and then I don't know who else they could get, but Iceland or whatever, then you have a real chance of getting to the last semis.
If I were you. So you see, that's sort of my point. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I just think that's how it goes with England. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong.
Okay, let's move on now to our biggests. I've not really given it a title.
Biggest there. Biggest.
World Cup. We're well over halfway. World Cup. Well over halfway. So we've got three categories we're going to have a quick discussion about. We probably should make it quite quick because we rattled on about beer.
Poor old Dave.
Biggest triumph of the World Cup so far. What's like the... Whew, That's impressive.
I'd say the Spain-Portugal game for me. That was just one where, you know, with World Cups, you watch games for the sake of it sometimes. Like, just, you wouldn't ever normally watch it. But this is one you really, really wanted to watch. You know, two very, very good teams coming up against each other. And it really delivered, didn't it? And it came to the end of the game, you thought, I'm really glad I watched that. I'm really glad I didn't miss any of that.
What was the game before? It was Iran... someone or other, wasn't it? We should probably know this off the top.
Morocco.
Iran Morocco was just starting, and I think Dan O'Hagan said, Spain Portugal would be brilliant, but the reason we watch Iran Morocco is so that we'll get to Spain Portugal and enjoy it. And I was like, but Iran Morocco is the sort of game where we'll finish 4-4 and be completely nuts, and then Spain Portugal, they'll cancel each other out and it'll be 0-0. Normally I'm right, but I kind of got done pretty badly on that one. It was a wonderful game, and Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, I suppose, dominated a lot of the chats, but we don't really want to go into that, do we?
Who is the best though?
Well, judging by that goal, three touches which were magnificent against Nigeria. I like Nigeria actually quite, yeah, got a lot of time
went out.
I think my moment is because Portugal Spain would be, except for blooming Marley Watkins, because I think last Friday Marley Watkins is, was it Friday when his departure was confirmed,
yeah,
on that game,
Spain Portugal game, yeah.
And myself and Mr. Davitt were sitting in the office ready to go, and that happened. So we sort of watched the game, but we were aware. That's how good it was. We were working, but the TVs were on, and we were still aware how brilliant it was. And I promise you, boss, we were working really hard. But my moment, I'm going for Jesse Lingard's goal, because that wasn't from a free kick. It was from open play. It was brilliant. And there's a lot of people moaned about Lingard, and he's a superb footballer, and he's gonna be really, really big, I think, for England. I enjoyed that, but there's been some great moments, but I really enjoyed that. I'd probably say Maradona as well. I enjoyed seeing that idiot doing that. You can cut that one out. It was just madness, wasn't it? The whole Maradona thing. I can't even go into it.
Don't you find Lingard a bit annoying? Is this cheeky, chappy sort of persona?
No, only the media who are out there trying to, poor old Gabby Logan trying on the balcony to extract everything and making him to be blooming Max Wall. You know, I mean, he's a footballer, he's got a bit of a sense of humour, fine, great. But I haven't really seen behind the scenes. I've only seen him on the field, and he's... You're a Liverpool fan. That's why you said that.
I think he's
a London-based Liverpool fan.
I think Lingard's looked great as a player, but
he's not really meaning this.
I first admit, I thought he was rubbish going to the World Cup.
Oh, well, you see, that's why it's my moment.
No, but, fair enough. But, he's... You know, he's a really clever player, isn't he? But I'm just a bit tired of the whole, isn't he a funny little chap?
I know the thing about Jesse Lingard is he scores goals. He just scores goals. That's the hardest bit. And he just pops up, doesn't he? He's got great timing.
He's flown over the radar, considering he scored a wonderful FA Cup winning goal as well. Not this season, was it? The season before? I like Lingard. I'm going to be stereotypically English and go for when the Mexicans beat the Germans. Which was beautiful. I loved every moment of it.
The beautiful game, yeah.
It was Father's Day. I watched it with my dad, which made it all the sweeter. And we just sat there going, the Germans are going to come back, aren't they? The Germans are going to ruin this. And they didn't. And it was wonderful to see. And the way they defended was utterly bizarre. And throughout this tournament has been strange. It's like they feel they're too good to defend, because you can literally play a ball right through the middle of their defence and run at the goalkeeper. And it's a shame that it hasn't gone further wrong for them. Was it Sweden that they somehow came back with 10
men? That was brilliant.
That was a great moment, wasn't it, really? And putting it all aside, what a goal that was.
Yeah, but then
down to 10
free kick.
That was the
most ridiculous tackle in the history of tackling in World Cup football.
Yeah, the poor guy has actually been... He got a lot of racist abuse, didn't he, afterwards? Sweden squad did this thing in front of the media.
There's no racism, but I wouldn't want him to be vilified for that.
No. But it was a silly tackle, but there's nothing to do with his race.
Oh, it was a ridiculous tackle. It was a ridiculous tackle.
Or his beard, for that matter.
I can think of a few people who might put it down on that.
Yeah, well, that's...
But there we go.
But anyway, that was a shame, and somehow the Germans have got away with it. But overall, it's...
they've got a bit of quality, Dave. What a free kick.
It was a fantastic free kick. I was in France 2 years ago for the Euros and I saw Germany beat Ukraine 2-0, I think it was. And Toni Kroos was the best player on the pitch by a mile that night. So I enjoyed seeing him live. But this World Cup overall has had loads of drama. I think it's been a brilliant World Cup.
It has been, absolutely. I have to say that Germany, Argentina both look like they're on the brink. Absolutely no surprise in this head that they both probably going to get through to the last. I shouldn't go too soon, should I? Both probably going to get to the last 16. Germany games on in the background. Lionel Messi's goal last night, those three touches, already mentioned it. What a moment. Okay, so biggest annoyance is the other one. I feel like we probably should have dedicated a little bit longer to this bit. We are slightly pressed for time, gents, so we'll go for it a little bit. But biggest annoyance, go on, Chris, just go for it.
Not enough Vladimir Putin. I'd like to have seen him in more games.
Right.
Glenn Hoddle saying, that ball, that left leg, that goal, that ball, that left leg, that goal, that. Too much use of the word of that. And Martin Keown. Just Martin Keown.
Martin Keown. I've got a separate element for the pundits, so we'll get on to the pundits, I'm sure. Biggest annoyance?
Biggest annoyance. Moaning about VAR, I would say. Oh, yeah. I just accept that it's here. I like it. It's... If people are thinking that the introduction of VAR is going to mean that 100% of decisions are correct all of a sudden, then they haven't been paying attention. It's still going to come down to human error to a certain extent, but I think a lot of things VAR has helped the referees to get the decisions right. Not everything, but there have been some good moments for that. And I actually like the little bit of drama it adds to it, but I'm just sick of... I think Gary Lineker actually, I can't remember which game it was I watched. It was after the Argentina game I watched last night. Gary Lineker mentioned VAR, but then he said, well, actually, we should talk about the goals first, shouldn't we? And yes, you should. You should talk about the goals first, not VAR.
Because VAR's not going anywhere either. That's the thing. Like, let's not sit there criticising VAR thinking, well, hopefully if we keep criticising it, it'll go away. This is... a fundamental improvement of the game, as far as I'm concerned. You can tweak it around the edges, but...
I would say Patrice Evra as a pundit.
Oh,
I cannot stand him.
I think he's done now, isn't he, as well?
I mean, I couldn't... But I'm so glad he's done, because...
He slipped off his chair, that's why he's done.
Yeah, he was just terrible. Like, just no research, just ill-informed comment, just get off my screen, really.
Good job you did then, Mark. Yeah. Well, that will segue us really nicely into our On the Sidelines, Q Sting. There it was. Which was going to be all about the pundits and how well or not well everyone was doing. But, you know, that's fine because we can go over here. Martin Keown, I mean...
How's he got the England games? I really don't understand how he has been selected.
Are we being trolled?
To an extent, I suppose. I'd much rather, I don't mean he's everyone cup of tea, but I prefer Danny Murphy to Martin Keown, certainly.
I think what annoyed me was in the England game when there was an offside, it was close, and he said, how can they call that offside? He was only a little bit offside. Well, you know, you're either pregnant or you're not. You can't be a little bit pregnant. And you're offside or you're not. You can't be a little bit offside. And that's annoying. He's just so... He gets his England shirt on and his England head, which is pretty nice, and he gets too far into it.
Thanks for giving me a beep.
Too far.
No, I've got a beep. I love a beep.
No, honestly, too much of Martin Keown. But it's a difficult job. It really isn't an easy job. He says, trying to get away from Martin Keown's lawyers.
This bizarre situation of ITV having four pundits and a presenter between games. Like, that's just too many people. And they're, you know, some good people there, but you don't end up hearing from them. Who's out of the BBC and ITV coverage, Mark? Who's winning? It's like a battle, isn't it? The World Cup battle.
I think the BBC just slightly. In terms of ITV coverage, I do like Gary Neville on there. I mean, I must admit, I think he's a brilliant pundit. Getting a little bit uncomfortable with Roy Keane. I think he's starting to play up to the whole miserable sort of punditry thing.
Starting to.
yeah. But I think Shearer's been really good for... on the BBC. I quite like Drogba as well. Zabaleta's been pretty good as well. So yeah, but I mean, let's face it, I mean, we're quite spoiled, aren't we, really, in terms of the opinions that we now get. It's just that some are just so much better than others, and you do just think, like, how did they, why have they chosen them sometimes? Like,
there are so many making a living out of it as well. Yeah. There's so many in these teams, and you've got the radio coverage as well. A few innovations as well, because we've got Ennio Luco and Alex Scott, isn't it, on the BBC. So actually, in terms of domestic male football coverage, we don't see female pundits. It hasn't happened before, basically. I've really enjoyed it. ITV, meanwhile, have got Mark Clattenburg, so they've opted against having a woman and having a referee. That's what they've done.
Yeah. No, I'm not going near Clattenburg. I am going nowhere near Clattenburg. You might not be surprised. Rio has been excellent. But Gary Neville. It's a shame he chose ITV, though, because I think I hate ITV. BBC's much superior to me. But I think had they been together, that would have been brilliant, because they're really good.
Yeah, I like Ferdinand a lot as well, and I always enjoy Ian Wright on England Games, just because he can have a laugh, generally.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he's more like, you know, your average working man, really. I think most people relate to him. I know there's been a bit of controversy over the two female pundits, in Alex Scott and Ennio Luco. Both of them have done quite a bit on Football Focus and things like that during the course of the last couple of seasons. I think maybe a little bit of Match of the Day, but not much. And the danger is that in sort of a PC world, people are just jumping to praise them because they're women, and because it's a little bit, like you say, a little bit innovative that we've got them on our screens for the big occasion. But I genuinely don't think that is the case. I think they are good, particularly Scott. I think she's very well researched, and she's clearly intelligent. She thinks about what she's going to say. And Ennio Luco, of course, went through all the fuss with the FA, didn't she? And she was big enough and strong enough to, or brave enough to sort of stand up to the FA. And Mark Scott, was it? Mark Sampson, who was the manager at the time. So she is clearly an intelligent lady as well. And she really, I think her knowledge of the game really comes through when she speaks. So I think they're both very good, and have both been positive additions to it. But yeah, I think Rio Ferdinand and Ian Wright, and I like Drogba as well. He's been good.
And the commentators, of course. I just don't get on with Guy Mowbray. I don't know what it is. But
I like Guy. He came and gave a talk at my university, though. When I did sports journalism at Staffs Uni in Stoke, and for some reason he was brought in to give us a speech on commentary, and he was really nice chat, really spent time with us and chatted to everyone afterwards and stuff as well. So he's always had my heart from there.
Hey, I'm sure he's a lovely bloke. Right, mailbag. This is our mailbag section. I did have a little fish for some questions on Twitter. The two that came back were on Norwich City transfer business, so I swiftly binned those, because we'll do a Norwich City podcast at some point in the future. But Mr. Laker, you had a question, and you've got your own answers, possibly.
Did I?
Yeah. Well, it was the one about...
If you had 10 million quid? You were Daniel Farke and you had 10 million quid to spend on a World Cup player... And don't be silly, because you're not going to get Messi and you're not going to get Ronaldo, but there are players that you could probably get for 10 million. Who would you buy? That was a question. My answer. My answer is scribbled somewhere on the page in front of me. Roman Sace, S-A-I-S-S, Moroccan, who's sadly with Wolves, so you're probably not going to get him.
But outside the German squad.
Yeah, I'm lobbing in Nelson Oliveira, and we could probably nick a couple of buses as well. But I'd have him if I could. Right. Yeah, have him.
Okay.
So it's 10 million to 11 million then, probably. But I think of one of those players, should we say, not from the top rung of superstars, I think he's been excellent. And there have been some really good players that have sort of come through that we don't know of. I mean, I don't see these guys play every week. Although Wolves fans will see Sace, but if that's how you pronounce it, apologies if not. But I like him, a Moroccan player, really good. Like him a lot.
Dave, you got him?
I'm afraid I haven't. I'm racking my brains trying to think of someone that would be a realistic one, but I can't.
You might get Phil Jones for 10 million.
Let's get Toivonen in.
He's only seven, I think, when they were trying.
Exactly. So, you know. Why didn't he want to come to Norwich again? Were they not big enough club? They're big enough for him now.
He went to Sunderland the following year after that. They got relegated, I think.
Goal he scored, though, against Germany, wasn't he? Mm. Yeah.
Was it because it was against Germany? It was just a good goal, in your view?
A bit of both.
I've written down. I mean, Nordin Amrabat, but then he's at Watford anyway, isn't he? Just for that beautiful strike that just kissed the frame of the goal.
Would have been
a wonderful goal, wouldn't it? And Viktor Claesson, I've been quite impressed with. He's at Sweden. He's at a Russian side, and the name escapes me, and I didn't write it down. Beginning with K.
Katrinburg.
Yeah, something like that. Apologies. But I have no idea how much he's probably on a lot of, in Russian circles. So
you could probably get the Sunderland lad, couldn't you, Kasri, for 10 million? Mm. Who is he? Tunisia?
Yeah.
He got absolute pelters from who was it who said he was a disgrace?
Phil Neville went off on it, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's a surprise.
He was like,
How have we not mentioned Phil Neville yet?
No, do you know what? I was wondering how he'd escaped. I thought something bad had happened, so we weren't allowed to mention him. But he's a soccer. How can two brothers be so different? Goodness me.
And he's the England women's manager.
He is.
But
now?
Yeah, but remember what happened to the last one.
he doesn't seem to be capable of expressing himself particularly well, does he?
There's so many things I want to say, but even you, Michael, haven't got enough bleeps.
There's not enough bleeps in the world. Moving on, the week ahead. So we know that we've discussed England briefly. As I said, the group, whichever that is, E, is currently being sorted out. I've gone E. I reckon it's group E. We do know four of the last 16 ties. So I'm going to rattle through them. Tell me who's going to go through. France v Argentina. What a game.
Argentina, sadly.
Oof.
If only because I wanted Griezmann as my top scorer for the tournament and he's failed miserably. I think Argentina just might have that little bit about them.
France have been awful, really.
Yeah, they've not been very good.
Someone made a good point the other day. That they remind me of England with our golden generation. We had so many good players, couldn't make them a team. And I don't think Deschamps got a clue out of
it. I shall miss speaking French during the commentary.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely more.
Did you see Paul Pogba speaking Spanish? Everybody already knew that.
Shouldn't be a surprise, wouldn't it? No.
He obviously speaks French, and he grew up in England, so French and English. Speaks Italian from his time with Juve, and then he was being questioned by a Peruvian reporter who had just tried his luck in the mix zone after the game against France, and asked him in English, and Pogba took a deep breath and then delivered a speech to them in Spanish, and this guy's jaw nearly dropped to the floor as they had no idea that Paul Pogba also spoke fluent Spanish.
What a dude, not just a pretty guy either. Uruguay, Portugal. Woof.
Uruguay were my dark horses. I don't like Portugal. I just don't like them. Could be something to do with a certain centre half.
It's not a great deal to Portugal. I know they won the Euro, so, but
there's not a great deal
to them apart from Ronaldo, is there really? No.
They seem to find a way to win, don't they? And I think that'll be a pretty brutal one.
Both sides are pretty good at that, exactly.
Yeah. I think you're going.
It's a great game. Spain, Russia. I guess it'll depend if it's the Russia we saw in the first two games or the Russia we saw in the last one.
Spain.
I think Russia will do that. I think Spain have been poor.
Russia will do Spain?
Yeah.
How much you got in your pocket?
Not a lot, mate. You know, I'm already borrowing off you.
How much my money you got in your pocket? Cause a bet coming on with this.
I think Spain will win that comfortably.
That's the sort that where that. I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if there's a few 50-50 decisions go Russia's way. I think Spain have been they've been poor, and controversially, I don't like watching them either, really.
And I couldn't believe the stat that David De Gea made his first save in their third game.
Four goals.
Yeah. He hadn't made a single save.
Yeah.
I mean, for a goalkeeper of his quality, it's remarkable. A lot will depend on Russia's preparations. Let's hope they go really well. And they prepare really well.
Mark, is this because you've been converted to rock and roll football as a Liverpool fan, and now you cannot stomach tiki-taka anymore?
That's right, absolutely, yeah.
Then we have Croatia-Denmark. Been quite impressed by Croatia. Yeah. Chris isn't...
No. I don't know how...
It's an Norwich connection, Chris. You can't slag it off.
No. Croatia every day of the week, please. I don't want to see Denmark ever again.
They've got good on the Croatian.
More Modric, please, as well.
Yeah, what a play.
Well, there we go. I don't know what we decided there, but it's going to be a great last day at that point. Right, we better wrap this up, gents. What a pleasure. We'd normally do any other business, but we could have the running theme that there isn't any. I'm quite milking that joke. So we'll say goodbye instead. And of course, plug all our content. I'm sure we'll do another one of these podcasts over the course of the World Cup at some point. All the latest Norwich City news, if you want that, of course, pinken.com. Me and Dave did a Facebook Live this lunchtime, so that'll be there as well as all the transfer speculation and your Jamal Lewis story, Dave. It's all good. Pinken.com for that. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast, then make sure you check out pinken.com/podcast. Until then, thanks very much, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Cheers. Enjoy the food.
Will do. Mark.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Pleasure. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you on the other side. Enjoy England v Belgium.
Yeah, bye.
Woke up.